We've got Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky in the House.
Good morning.
Probably busy today.
I'm a little busy today, Greg. Yeah,
are you?
Yeah. But I'm glad to be here with you.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
An all too rare visit.
I do it as often as I can.
Yeah,
but
I understand.
Yeah, I'm on my way from here to Lansing today.
Okay, the big question for Mike Shirky: are you running for governor yet?
No, I'm not running for governor. I have my hands full in the current role that I am in, and I've got everything.
I'm going to ask you that every time we talk for the next 2 years, the good Lord willing.
Yeah, you can ask me. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm not going to limit your speech
because I want to be the first to know. Okay.
Thank you, Greg.
So, 9,010 new cases of COVID the last 2 days, Mike.
Sunday and Monday. That's right. Yeah.
Is that just mind-boggling?
Well, you know, I think it's an indication of a couple of things. One, it's pretty natural, and virologists and epidemiologists have shared with me that it's not unusual for a virus to, as it evolves, become more contagious, less virulent. I think we're seeing the evidence of the first. I'm not sure we've seen any evidence of the latter yet. And so we're assembling a series of public service announcements, matching up senators in the Senate with their local health system medical executives, a chief medical officer in a hospital in Saginaw, for instance.
Right.
And doing public service announcements, and just simply, because this is what I think we should have been doing from the beginning. This is real. Here are the things that everybody needs to do to help. Keep the spread minimized. We're not going to stop the spread, but we can absolutely keep it minimized. And then there's 4 or 5 points in that. And if we're all singing out of the same on the same hymnal, the same page for the music and the same lines, we can move the needle. But I think people are very fatigued, of course, with this, and it's understandable. And then we're also, with the extent of the days, we're kind of tending toward the inside. One of the biggest concerns that I think is very legitimate are big family gatherings over the holidays. And it hurts my heart to have to talk about that. But I think the prudent thing to do is to get creative on how you conduct those family gatherings. Do some amazing Zoom stuff, inner family. Do some amazing outside stuff, weather permitting. But be really, really careful about, getting together and feeling good, but then potentially setting it up for some disappointment afterwards.
Is that the biggest thing maybe we're not doing right now is the gatherings?
Yeah, you take a look at most businesses are being very judicious about expecting people to wear masks.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I have been very consistent. Please don't contest where you're patronizing or where you're going. If a business says please wear a mask, then just do it. Don't push back. There are some examples where we send mixed messages. When the Department of Health and Human Services issued a requirement for restaurants to have to take names and addresses and phone numbers for people coming in, or they could refuse service, and then 3 days later they changed that to just making it voluntary. That could have been done differently, and I think people would have embraced it, actually. By just simply saying, you and I and our wives sit down at a table, and they come over and give us a little card and says, this is table 7, and you're here on November 2nd at 10 p.m., give us a phone number, please. And that they would keep on record, and then that table would be responsible for then responding should something happen.
But sure.
It just got too invasive and too burdensome and too confrontational, unnecessarily confrontational. And those are the kinds of things that we miss when these executive orders or these orders from the department come out without a little bit of vetting, just a little bit of vetting.
Right.
But we're all... we're stepping up our messaging the best we can. I don't think we need a mask mandate because I think everybody in Michigan knows what we need to do. Mandates, one of the first considerations for mandates is the question of, well, how do you enforce it? And that one is really hard. So
I don't see any legitimate way.
I say we inform and we inspire, and we encourage, and we just keep hitting it. Inform, inspire, encourage, inform, inspire, encourage, and just keep that up until hopefully this news of the vaccines that has been announced the last couple of days comes to fruition, and we can. But even then, we have to be careful because it'll be months before they can ramp up production.
Sure,
you know. So frontline healthcare workers, vulnerable people. I'm going to campaign that and advocate that high in that list are teachers, because we need to get kids back to school. You know, but if we can get the teachers looked at similar as a frontline worker, I think that'd be a very good, wise move for us.
And naturally, with the 9,000 new cases, the school report from Sunday was not very encouraging.
Right,
131 high schools and 30 some odd colleges.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's real. I think the last piece of data I saw in the universities and colleges was there's like something like 85,000 cases across the nation, and like zero or three hospitalizations. That's not the problem. The problem is that those kids, those young people, then go
spread.
This is what my five things are: be situationally aware. Just be situationally aware, not just where you're at and who you're exposed to, but who you might be exposing.
Right.
Because you might not know if you're, you know. Social distance, hygiene, respect the orders of businesses that you patronize and places you go. And if you can't avoid close contact, wear a daggone mask, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that message, I think we can all kind of lock arms on. And I'm hoping we can anyway.
Are you concerned about any future shutdowns?
Yeah, the data is growing also there that the shutdowns were not as effective as we'd hoped they would be. And the other negative outcomes were far greater than we expected them to be. And but if you'd like to take a look at across the country, this virus is indiscriminate. You know, in states where there were huge lockdowns and still remain huge lockdowns, they're still having runaway. And then, of course, states where they didn't do it, like the Dakotas, they're now experiencing it. And,
Utah.
But the last week, the top five or top four were Colorado, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine. All of those were, you know, pretty intense controls and lockdowns. So it's indiscriminate, and it is. I think that to me demonstrates the evidence that its contagiousness is increasing. I just hope we start seeing some evidence that its virulence is decreasing, but I don't think we've seen that evidence quite yet.
Okay, the election. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts.
First of all, and you've heard me say this in this room before to you, voters are always right. It doesn't matter whether I agree with them or not. Voters are always right. And I think in Michigan, though there are some irregularities in some anecdotal stories that I believe deserve some analysis, I very seriously doubt that it's going to change the outcome in Michigan. I have no clue about the other states, you know, across the nation. But what I do know is this. We can't afford to not study this election cycle in great detail. This was the first one that in Michigan, at least, where we were inundated with the use of mail-in/absentee ballots. I hesitantly use the word mail-in because that, to some people, that implies that ballots were mailed out unsolicited, and that's not the case in Michigan. And I think
most of them were probably dropped in a drop box.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, even drop boxes, for example, you know, we tried really hard toward the end of running up to the election to provide some guidelines and some protections for security of drop boxes, but we fell short of what we really needed to do. Florida is a very interesting example for us to study. Their laws are such that when an absentee ballot or a mail-in ballot is received, it's tabulated right then. It's counted right then. And I didn't hear any leakage of those tabulations until after 8 o'clock on Tuesday night last week. And so that to me would be the best way to both provide security in the integrity of the ballots themselves and be able to respond to this, you know, this new way, this new normal of, you know, mail-in ballots. So we have a number of holes I think need to be addressed and filled in our election laws. But I'm going to just repeat myself. I don't think any of these things will likely end up showing any difference in the ultimate outcome in Michigan's election.
But your chairperson got on Twitter and put out a phone number and said, call me if you saw any. Now, you're going to get every crackpot in town calling that number, good or bad, you know.
Right.
Good or bad.
Right.
Is that a way to investigate?
No, it's not a way to investigate. I would have hoped that the message would have been more along the lines of, just like in 2016, there was a lot of analysis made before that election was called. Just like 2000, you know, there was a lot of analysis made before the ultimate vote was called, condition was called. But I suspect we're going to end up with President Biden. And then we should roll our sleeves up and figure out how to get on with life from here. But we should not deny the process. There are laws in place that guide and guard and define the process of establishing. Because what we all should want is to go to bed at night, lay our head in a pillow, and have confidence that the election was legit. And I think we need to just let the process play it out for a few days, and I think that'll be the final outcome.
The Trump campaign put out a list of 14,000 apparently dead people who voted in Michigan. CNN took 50 names out of there. 37 are dead and didn't vote. 5 are alive and voted, and the other 8 are alive and did not vote. I mean, this kind of stuff is just...
Yeah.
Isn't it a waste of energy?
Nobody should be making accusations and nobody should be going public with accusations unless they've done some level of analysis to for the veracity of the claim.
Right.
And social media.
You don't see anything, do you?
Not yet.
Okay.
The one thing that that does concern me, and it doesn't, this would not affect the outcome of the election. But for 2 months, we've been asking the Secretary of State for the details, the data on who the unrequested absentee ballot applications were sent out to, mailed out to by the Secretary of State. The fact that they were mailed out by a government agency is not necessarily an outlier. Other states do that. I've now been informed. But what bothers me is that for 2 months, we've been asking for what was the geographic and demographic distribution of those mailings, just to make sure it was uniformly done,
right,
whether it was random or what. But there was somebody has to go into a database and select different codes to determine what's drawn from that database for the mailings to then occur. And so I want to see that data. Not necessarily that it'll have any effect on the outcome of this election, but you know, that could be used to skew things. I'm not suggesting that it was, I'm scratching my head wondering why was it so difficult to just get the data.
Now, you a couple months ago kind of predicted this sort of scenario because mm-hmm. the Republicans told the secretary you're not touching the ballots until election day. So, you know, when you get 3 million.
Right.
But late ballots or mail-ins, that it's going to take some time.
Michigan was not an outlier in the time it took to report, even though we had a record level of absentee ballots. The clerks across the state did a fantastic job of processing them. And there were a couple of places where they were overwhelmed, and Wayne County was one of them. But that was predictable as well.
Yeah.
You know, we did allow them to pre-process, basically pre-stage them on the day before so that they could be ready. And when there was openings in the actual voting, they could be feeding them into machines. The reason we didn't also allow pre-counting is simply that I don't think we had enough time to make sure that it was secure. Now we've learned that that's what Florida does and has been doing. And so there's a way to do it insecure and keep it secure. So, you know, it's incumbent upon us now to study that. And that's one of the holes in our election laws that I think we need to really focus on.
Should we have an election day, or should it be an election week or an election weekend?
Well, I believe in the literal interpretation of our Constitution, and it is for the president, it's an election day. And I don't understand why there's anybody that's even wavering on that. Listen, if you were going to, let's pretend that there were no absentee ballots at all. No, everybody just goes to the polls. And you knew that the polls closed at 8. And it takes you 30 minutes to drive to wherever you're going to be voting. Well, you wouldn't leave at 10 minutes to 8 and expect to be able to vote. You have to plan. You have to accommodate those kinds of things. In the same way with mail-in. If you're going to use that methodology, you have to allow enough time for that process and the variabilities thereof to get to the poll. I do think that there's a potential for a small window if the postmarks can be verified. But here again is another one of those ambiguities where some mail-ins had postmarks that were clear to identify and some didn't. And that depends upon whether there's prepaid postage or not and a lot of all the other conditions with how things are mailed. And those are the holes that we have to fill so that people can be confident that the process works.
But if we didn't have absentee ballots this time, we would have had a nightmare at some of these polling places, right?
It sure looks like it. Yeah, because we even with
it, 6 million voters.
Yeah. We should be celebrating the fact that we had a terrific turnout.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in my lifetime, it's the best we've ever had, you know. That's also a testament to how polarized our country is and our state is, and
we're divided.
We are divided, right? And we have to, you know, I'm a big believer in you always find what you're looking for. You always find what you're looking for. And so my admonition to everybody in either side of that equation is start training your eyes to look for ways in which we can shrink that polarization. I don't know that we'll ever get rid of it, but we can shrink it.
New speaker in the House, Mike, what can you tell us about him?
Jason Wentworth is a fine, fine young man. I know Jason very well now since I've served with him in the legislature. He's a quiet guy. And he's very studious. He's very strategic. I think he has a lot of courage, and I'm looking forward to serving him with him for the remainder of my term, 2 more years.
So, what's anything on your plate this week that might excite us?
We're going to try tomorrow in the Senate to see if we can get enough votes to pass allowing community colleges under certain conditions to offer up bachelor's degree in nursing. It should not be a contentious issue.
No.
It should not be a contentious issue, but believe me, it's fascinating to me how these kinds of things are contentious.
It's crazy.
You know, and there's no disputing that we need more and higher trained nurses. No disputing. And the richest source of that are those with associate's degrees that are working. And the best way for them to fulfill that next level of education is to do it locally so they can continue to take care of their family and work and so forth.
More affordable.
But it is, and more affordable, of course.
Yeah.
But it is a close vote, unfortunately. And so we're going to be, that's one of the things that to kind of look out for tomorrow. And if we can get enough votes, we'll send it over to the House and, you know, see what happens then. But that's probably the biggest legislative action news of this week.
What do you expect before the end of the year? Anything?
I hope I'm not jinxing us, but I believe this will be a very lame duck.
Uh-huh.
You know, we'll be doing some codification of some more of the orders related to COVID. We'll do probably a supplemental to fix some of the things in the budget. There'll be a long list of cats and dogs that we didn't do through the session in spring and early fall because either the election interrupted it or COVID interrupted it. And so there's a long list of, I call them cats and dogs. They're important to somebody, so I don't want to disparage anybody, but they're not big issues.
Right.
But I don't see any huge, big things done in lame duck. We've got, again, a gap there between the legislature and the governor, and you know this magic numbers of 56, 20, and 1 required to pass any legislation, and so that's kind of my assessment. Again, I hope I didn't jinx. I hope I didn't just jinx us.
How painful the budget next year?
It's going to be more challenging than what this year's was,
yeah,
for sure. And kind of depends on how bad COVID gets now between now and the end of the year. Sales tax revenue is staying pretty solid, but there are other indications that suggest that we're going to, again, now with a new administration in Washington, You know, if the feds come through with turning the printing press on and sending out more fake money, you know, by printing money. And I say that a little tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, that's the reality of the kinds of decisions that they have to make.
Yeah, well, look at the deficit.
Right. It's almost as if we don't pay attention to it anymore, right?
Right.
And it's you and I, we won't have to worry about it so much. But
probably
those
not.
those that follow us, it's going to come back to roost at some point in time.
Mike, thanks for coming out today.
Greg, it's good to see you, and thank you, and keep up the good work.
Appreciate it.
Yep.